Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 459. And tonight, we are recapping three episodes of the latest season of Love, Death, and Robots. And Catherine watched a couple more episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3?
Season 4.
But we're going to start with Love, Death, and Robots. Obviously, spoiler warnings for everything. Which one did you want to start with?
Probably 400 Boys, I think, since that's the one... I mean, it's Robert Valley. It's obviously gorgeous. Great. I mean, amazing to watch. I think it felt like in this episode, he was doing with people's expressions and talking what he does a lot of time with movement, in that it may not be photorealistic, and yet somehow it looks more real than if he just like done motion cap or something.
Yeah, a lot of this, you've got one character who kind of zips around on roller skates, whatever, post-apocalyptic world, whatever, and she looked great, but her movements were just so smooth and fluid and just totally fun to watch. It's just, they were obviously getting ready to fight somebody, and then you see what they're fighting, and I'm like, where the hell did that come from?
I think this was based on a short story written by somebody who was working for the Half-Life team, the video game. So it's cyberpunk, futuristic sort of thing. We'll probably post a link to the article that I found about it. I mean, just the author's thoughts as he was writing it. And one of the reasons why he wrote the story in the first place was he wanted to have fun coming up with different names for like the gangs, which is always kind of fun. But okay, hear me out. Zima Blue, the first one that Robert Valley ever did for Love, Death, and Robots.
Yes.
It is, you get all the explanation that you need about the world that we're in. It's all kind of drip fed in, but there's this gradual progression of technology advancing. And that's, you know, it's done at a personal level and a societal level. So it's really interesting. Second one, you jump into a world already in progress, and not covering history or anything like that. It's just there, just a kind of slice of life sort of story. And you maybe get some explanations, but not really about, you know, what everybody's doing or anything like that. And then you have this, and you instantly jump to a bunch of gang members trying to raise a gun and a bunch of bullets with the power of their mind and trying to focus on that because they need it in order to fight a war. I don't feel like we were given anything to explain what the hell was going on.
No, especially since, you know, you kind of start to feel like you got your fingernails in it, you know, okay, this is a war and everybody's bonding together. And then the bad guys shown up and they are giant angry babies. And you're like, I have no idea what's happening. And we are never given any kind of explanation whatsoever.
No, it finishes the battle and it's done. I mean, as far as I could understand, the whole world was already trashed by nuclear fighting, but somehow the nuclear fighting kind of cracked open reality and released these giant babies that are somehow called the 400 boys. And it's like, I could watch it again because it's really interesting to watch. And I am a sucker for that sort of thing where you're in the post-apocalypse and somebody is holding a conversation while effortlessly skating around on roller skates. I mean, that's always fun to watch. I don't know what was going on. And I just, I guess maybe I'm spoiled with all of this, you know, MCU stuff going on, that everything has got to be part of a story, of a series of, like, you know, you finish this and like, wow, maybe we'll get to find out more about this interesting world, but we probably won't.
Nope. I think we are probably never going to come back to this ever again. And it's a little unsatisfying, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But like you said, I mean, it's just so pretty to look at. It's just, you're not going to see a style of animation like this anyplace else.
Okay, the other one I wanted to talk about was, I think it was called The Other Big Thing.
The Other Large Thing.
The Other Large Thing. And this is an origin story, I think, for the three robot stories from the previous seasons.
Yes.
I don't think it added anything. I'm sorry. I just don't.
No, it's, you know, you've got a cat and the cat doing a cat thing where they think they're the ruler of the world and they can't understand why their servants aren't back, and their servants show up. And it's just this like cartoonishly grotesque heavyweight couple, whatever, who've bought a little robot. And in short, the cat ends up bonding with the robot and they both agree to get more robots in the neighborhood so that they can all take over humanity, cats and robots together. And that's about it. It was a very short episode.
It was very short. I think the joke was that the cat, you know, Mr. Sanchez was the name on the cat's food bowl, but that is not his name. And he tells the robot, one day you will learn my name. You will all learn my name. And then I think, you know, everyone will remember the name of Dingleberry Chokefur or something like that. Yeah, it's just like something stupid. Yeah, because you knew that was going to happen. And it was all done very seriously. And it's like, what's like what the three robots had talked about, that humans treated robots horribly and then the robots killed them. And that's that was the joke in the second Three Robots episode. And this is an entire episode based around that joke.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I mean, the animation is great and it looks wonderful and everything. I'm going to come back to the rating on that in a minute after we discuss the next one, because I thought the ratings that IMDb is showing were kind of interesting.
Okay, okay. And the last one that I watched was Golgotha.
Yes, yeah. Or Golgotha? I always wonder, how do you say that?
I get no idea.
Okay, well, we could have looked this up ahead of time, but why would we prepare? It's interesting. You've got the guy's name. What is his name? We interviewed him in part of the Voltron voice cast thing. Hang on, I'm going to look it up, because it would be really, because everybody knows this guy. He's totally famous in many different ways.
The priest, right?
Yes. Ah, got it. Rhys Darby, you know, R-H-Y-S Darby. He's even shown up on an episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, because he and Dan have done a cryptid podcast together. But he is, I remember interviewing him for the Voltron voice cast one, and he was super nice and funny. And he's really, every time I see him, I'm like, oh my God, I interviewed that guy. So I think he did a great job. And it was interesting. I was thinking at first it was live action with a thin overlay of CGI on top, but I don't think that's the case. I think the CGI was probably the scenery and certainly the creature that they were talking to, but the rest of it was all just flat out live action.
Yeah, and this also felt like a joke that had been stretched out to an entire story, that basically some priest saw a dolphin that had been killed by an oil spill, and then it like, or with a bunch of dolphins had been killed, and then it somehow came back to life, or maybe it wasn't dead, I don't know. And it goes back into the sea, and this priest proclaims it a resurrection. And he said even afterwards, I was just kind of caught up in the moment. Well, aliens have like appeared in orbit, and they want to talk to the priest that heralded the resurrection. So now he has to go down onto a beach and talk with this beautifully animated alien, like all tentacles, so cool, with a big helmet filled with water. So it's obviously a water-based alien talking with the priest. And it seems like, I don't know if the priest caused this or called attention to it, or they were just looking for confirmation, but the dolphin that came back to life is this race's messiah. And now the dolphin talks to the alien somehow as it's diving out in the world. And the message that the alien gets is that humankind has to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And that's, and that's it.
Yep. The priest has been told many times in the episode, don't fuck this up. And of course the last line when they're asking like, what happened? He's like, I think we fucked it up. Boom. That's the end. Mm-hmm. And that's very short episode. What I think is interesting is this episode has the second to lowest rating of all the episodes. It's coming in at a 5.2, and I'm sorry, I think that's mean.
It is.
It's like, yeah, for its shortness, and I don't know, it's not really a very original story, I suppose. But I mean, that would like give it like a 6 at the lowest. Like when you get into the 5s, that's when something is actually bad. So I saw that and I went, oh, come on, 5.2. That's taking it too far. Calm down, IMDb.
I think this season may be a victim of its own, of the high ratings for the previous seasons. Because it's not like, I don't think anybody thinks that the episodes are bad. I think they were just disappointed because the bar's been set so high.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the rating for 400 Boys?
Oh, God, I would probably put it like a 6.3 at the lowest, just because I didn't think the story was all that great.
It's coming in at a 5.7.
Oh, come on.
Yeah,
that's no, clearly. You and I give a lot of weight to wonderful art and great animation. I mean, that will that will outweigh a lot of other flaws, but it's not that low.
No, it is definitely not that low. Interesting. What would you guess would be the lowest rated episode of the season so far?
Oh, so far?
Yeah.
Probably the other large thing.
No, actually, it's Can't Stop, the marionette one. Take a guess at the rating on that one.
5.1.
4.1.
Oh, come on. on? Yeah, who the seriously. Heck is going this on can... here and giving such... There's got to be people like trolling the season at this point, just going in and giving a lot of 1.0 ratings to Bork the rating system.
It might be. I would guess that. And that's why it's interesting. The other large thing, mm-hmm. 7.0.
It's because of the cat, isn't it?
It must be.
A cat.
The animation is technically brilliant. I didn't connect with the story at all. And the animation is sort of like, I don't know, I guess it's grotesque, I suppose. But I'm like, that seems a little high, you know, I guess.
And it's like the whole bit about the humans, his owners being these really fat, grotesque, awful slobs kind of thing. And like... And you look at that and you go, well, that just feels kind of mean. It's not even in a funny way.
Yeah, yeah. I was glad that Spider Rose is coming in at a 7.0.
So okay. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. He Can Creep is coming in at a 6.3, which seems a little low.
A little low. Yeah.
I like the fact that we've got three more episodes that you and I need to watch. Mm-hmm. Screaming of the Tyrannosaur comes at a 6.2. Mm-hmm. Smart Appliances, Stupid Owners comes in at a 5.3.
Well, it's very short. And I think it's also mostly going to be focused on stupid things.
Probably. We can look forward, hopefully, to How Zeke Got Religion. That's coming in at a 7.1. So, but I don't know. It's hard to tell if we've got something to look forward to. The ratings seem to be really off this season.
I have seen at least one person comment that they thought How Zeke Got Religion was kind of a callback to one of the earlier seasons of Love, Death, and Robots. They thought it was really fun.
Okay. All right. That's fingers crossed and everything. But yeah, I mean, I didn't mind any of the three episodes that we just watched. I didn't think any of them were bad. They were interesting. You know, they were definitely not boring.
It's certainly not deserving of that low of a rating, I don't think.
That seems harsh. Yeah, that does. So anyway, that's all for Love, Death, and Robots this week. So which episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks did you watch?
I watched season 4, episode 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that this season that I don't think we've seen any episodes that has all four, well, with T'Lyn now 5, of the main characters in one storyline, in one adventure. But I would have to go back and look at the previous seasons to see if that was also something that they would just save for like the big overarching stories. But yeah, the episode 2, the three storylines is Boimler's trying to get his new quarters and he's finding something horrible about every one of them. Rutherford is feeling bad that his friends are now promoted to another rank. So he's like working himself half to death to deserve a promotion so he can join them. And Mariner... Well, she overheard Ransom talking with the security officer that Mariner wasn't going to be his problem any longer, and she figured he's going to demote her. So she's decided, being Mariner, what she's going to do is she's going to earn that demotion. So they go to a... I can't even remember what it's called, where it's like a zoo in space. And they, apparently a couple of humans accidentally got caught up in this zoo. So they're going there to and I thought they were going to be like breaking them out of there. But no, they're talking to the proprietor of the museum and he apologizes for the confusion and he's walking them to the area. And Mariner's just like poking at Ransom and making this brand new ensign who's along with them feel really uncomfortable. And at one point she looks at this really cute alien called the Moopsie. And it's just like, you know, it's a little marshmallow of a creature that occasionally says, Moopsie! And it gets out. And for a while, everyone thinks that Mariner was the one that let it out, but she didn't. But this thing... It's very cute, and a lot of times you'll just see it in the background kind of waddling, going, Moopsie! But yeah, it's kind of like a vampire, except when it bites onto people, it drinks their bones!
They never fail to come up with great monsters in this
great
series.
Great monsters, yes. So it's like, and the proprietor of the museum gets killed by this thing, and they're all desperately trying to get away, and finally Ransom and Mariner have it out. And Ransom was surprised that she had overheard what he was saying. And he was like, yeah, I'm not going to fall for your attempts at insubordination like all of your other commanding officers did. And he's like, I'm not going to take the bait. And she's like, I wasn't throwing out any bait. I'm never insubordinate. He's like, you're like that all the time. And I really love how the voice actor and the animators work together to have this, like, she's being defiant, but she's not even sure anymore what she's arguing about. She's like, but I mean, I didn't shut up. Just, and she ends up having to admit the fact that even if she doesn't think that she's about to get demoted, she's always trying to pick at her commanding officers to somehow deserve to get treated badly or to like be punished for it. And she doesn't know why she's doing it. And Ransom is just like, I think you're going to be a fantastic officer and you've got my total support. And it's really nice. Oh, but they still have to deal with the murderous Moopsie. And
yes,
Ransom figures out what to do. And he tells Mariner that she just has to punch him in the face. And she just like gives this little eh. And he's like, no, come on, really punch. And then, you know, God bless the animator. She puts her weight behind it in this like very surprising punch and knocks a tooth out. And then she realizes what he's doing. He's making bait for the monster because it eats bones. So she's just like beating the tar out of him. And they're both laughing and his teeth are flying everywhere. The poor ensign's like, oh my God, I should have like taken the science team. But they do manage to get the Moopsie back into its cage. And then Mariner spots something with the humans that there's a door that has been futzed with and it falls open. And like the woman in the habitat just kind of slams it closed. Like nobody's going to see this. Yeah. They purposefully messed with it because they wanted the proprietor to get murdered so they could take over the museum and make all the money from it. So now they're just behind until somebody else feels like it's come and get them because, you know, nobody else in Starfleet's going to bother.
No, God, no.
But, God, what else? So Rutherford, after he's worked himself to exhaustion and tells Tendi that he just feels bad that he won't be able to hang out with them anymore. And Tendi just decides, I am your superior officer. Stand to attention. And then she tells him, we are going to hang out and we're going to continue to do fun things and support each other. And they hug. And he says, wow, now I wish I'd accepted some of my other promotion officers. Like, what? He'd been getting tons of offers to be promoted, but he always turned it down because he wanted to stick with his friends.
Aww.
So, and he doesn't know how he's going to deal with that. And then Tendi just shouts from across the room at Billups, hey, can Rutherford go ahead and have one of his promotions that he turned down? And Billups like, oh yeah, sure. And that was it. He gets promoted.
Adorable. Just adorable.
I mean, and the last thing is that Boimler, the first room that he went to was right beside one of the nacelles, and it was just streaming burning red light into the entire room. Well, at the end of the episode, he and Rutherford are going, you know, they're going to be bunking together, and they go into a room and it's filled with red light. And Boimler's like, because this has been a nightmare experience for him to trying to find something good. And he's freaking out. And Rutherford's like, oh, wow, that's really bright. I'm going to go ahead and darken the tint on the windows. And he does. And it's fine. It's like not even indistinguishable from any other nice room. And
Because of course.
But Boimler manages to feel better because now he's got bunk beds and now he's going to have the same dent over it that he had in his last bed from sitting up too fast and slamming into it.
I know. Bless Boimler.
Bless Boimler. Okay, so the next episode is that Boimler is in charge of an away team for the first time, where he and the captain are going down to help out this computer that runs, it's basically a Larry Niven ring world.
Right.
Which is great. And which, if you guys ever have a chance to read Larry Niven's Larger Than Worlds essays, I highly recommend it because it goes into just how friggin' big these kind of structures are.
You like, have no idea.
If you have a ring that is set at like Earth orbit around a planet, but the entire thing is filled up with Earth atmosphere and Earth, you know, landscape, whatever like that, that's like millions of Earths. You have people on one end of the ring who probably like only believe in people from the other part of the ring from like legends of myth or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
It is so far away. But of course something goes wrong when the captain tries to reboot the computer. So now the entire structure is, you know, being reset. And I think like an older version of the computer is taking over and it's going to wipe out all of humanity on the entire ring. But
sure.
But meanwhile, Boimler, he's so worried that his crew is going to get hurt that he's trying to do everything himself. And it's T'Lyn that finally has to talk to him and say, away missions are dangerous, but you have to trust your crew. You just have to. They are looking for you to trust them as you're trying to protect them. So they all end up working together and Boimler gets killed. But then he gets revived by the doctor and like, yes, Ransom's like, oh, congratulations on your first death. Everything gets harder from now. And Boimler collapses and then flatlines. And the Dr. Tan is like, oh, for fuck's sake, somebody give me some of whatever worked to revive him the last time.
It's so Star Trek. Oh, my God.
So Star Trek. But I think the side story was Rutherford Tendy and Mariner assigned to check this entire room full of thousands of computer chips because one of them may be going wrong. And they're thinking the entire time that this is going to be some kind of like hazing incident. But when they finally set up a trap for the guy who assigned it, he gives them this sob story about how he was so worried because, I mean, the entire ship could be destroyed if his one ship wasn't found. So he's so glad they found out what the problem was. And then he like, he has a terrible memory in childhood of having been trapped inside this game thing, puzzle that takes you to another universe or something like that. And he was in it for a month because he's too stupid to figure out the puzzle. So they have to run around trying to fix things. And it's all kind of, well, Tendy gets to be badass and like run through all the checks on these computer chips. Rutherford gets to be a badass because he accidentally does get trapped inside the puzzle. So he has to bowl his way out as fast as possible. And Mariner has to sit and listen to interminable discussions about this kind of weird jazz that involves spit. And she's just like, yeah. Oh, God. They finally manage to fix it. And then the ending, you see the guy who assigned it to them sitting with Ransom, and they're laughing about the fact that Mariner and Tendy and Rutherford all believed the sob story he told them. So now I'm wondering, was it all hazing, or was it an actual job that Ransom knew ahead of time that they were going to have to like, they were going to have to manipulate them into doing this horrible job?
Right. And I haven't watched that episode in a while. I'd actually have to go back to it because I think it's a little ambiguous.
It's very ambiguous. They do not manage to wrap that up very well, I don't think, but I'm sure on purpose. But yes. Yeah. So it's just a couple of fun episodes.
It was. Oh, this whole show is fun. I did read the first Lower Decks graphic novel. I think it's called Rarely Going Where No One Has Gone Before. It was fun. It was definitely, it was kooky. It was weird. I think it works a lot better as a graphic novel for a Star Trek series because it's an animation. Mm-hmm, so the characters mm-hmm. actually look more like themselves, which is always my sticking point when reading, like reading an X-Files book or a Star Trek book. I'm like, they don't always look like themselves, but this was good. And also the author was constantly putting in notes at the bottom of the pages and everything. And that was fun too. So volume one, if you ever want to check that one out, that's pretty fun.
Yeah. Cause they, one of the things that Mariner, Tendy and Rutherford, they have access to this room of artifacts, I think, that gets hung onto until Starfleet can figure out where to send it. And if you look at the X-ray on Amazon Prime as you're watching it, they have this long paragraph detailing what each one of the things are that are inside that room and the episodes that it came from. And it's like, oh my God, this is just for all the nerds.
Absolutely. I always got to give something to the nerds.
When you were talking about the graphic novel, I think with the show, it's equally balanced between the three elements. It's the animation, the voice actors, and the writing. And with a graphic novel, well, you've definitely got the writing and you've probably got the artwork, but you're not going to have the voice actors or the actual flow of the animation that keeps surprisingly with the little flourishes that they do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You miss all of that. It is fun, though, when you're reading it, though. You can actually hear them saying it in their voices every time. I'm like, I can hear this happening. This is great. So that's it for Star Trek Lower Decks. But on the subject of graphic novels, I want to mention real quick, I finally read Adam Warren's Empowered Volume 12.
And I
did put a review up on the site. Yes, yes, I did. And I put it out there onto the social medias. And he actually, I guess we're calling it skeeting on Blue Sky. I don't know, whatever. But he re-skeeted it. He quote re-skeeted it and said he was glad that we did that. Because he said, I was really looking forward to what you were going to say on it. I'm like, oh, wow, he really cares about my opinion. That's amazing. I think it was a good, and spoilers, mild spoilers. This is the end of this type of volume of Empowered. I mean, these 200-page graphic novels take him literally, I'm not exaggerating here, literally years to complete. And you can see in the detail in these things why it takes so long. Just, you've got the rough, you know, pencils going in and then the inking process and everything. And it's just mind-bogglingly detailed to where one page could probably take like a week to do. And the sales just aren't there anymore. And he admits in the afterwards that part of that is, you know, when it's like, four years between issues this last time, the audience kind of forgets that you exist. And I didn't want to say that's probably one of the reasons why I didn't notice when it came out, but that could be it.
That could be. When it takes that long, I mean, you can keep checking, but sometimes it's going to be a few months in between checks.
Yeah, but it's really, I can't blame that. I just wasn't paying attention. So anyway, it's 5 months later. But he did say that he does want to go back to the story, and he left several questions deliberately unanswered, like to the point of someone asking a question at the end of the graphic novel that does not get answered. So there's more story to tell. He had sort of like a hypothetical, like somebody wondering like, oh, I wonder if this is a way that their lives could end up. And then they had this really cute image and you're like, oh, that'd be nice. But it definitely doesn't say that that's what actually happens. That's, you know, somebody saying maybe this would be cute. And I'm like, that's kind of a nice little thing to do. You know, it's like, I'm not saying this is how it ends, but it could be how it ends. So, but yeah, here's hoping that he comes back to it. I think there's more we can get out of this one.
Oh yeah. I'm looking forward to reading that one. I need to go back and reread some of the Dirty Pair episodes.
Oh
that he
man.
Did.
Yeah.
It's
seriously.
Just so fun.
Oh God. And then, I reread Bubblegum Crisis, the one that he did.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that one still, it really holds up. Even if you never really, I guess it's called Bubblegum. The TV show was called Bubblegum Crisis, I think. And I think this was Bubblegum Crash, but I could have those flipped around. But even if you never watched the TV show, I think that graphic novel holds up on its own really, really well.
It does.
And it also, like, it sticks the ending. Like, it's got a really good ending, I think. But man. Anyway. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. We've got two more movie reviews coming up from Hugh in the next like day. So look out for those. And then you've got a review dropping with three more Hugo nominated novellas.
Yes, I think that will already be on the site by the time this episode drops.
Nice, nice. We've got all the reviews going on. All that and more. pixelatedgeek.com. So we should have another Night Vale episode by next week, I think.
Yes, and we need to watch the last three episodes of Love, Death, and Robots this current season. And more Star Trek Lower Decks. I started watching the following episode, and it's the one where Tendi has been invited to attend a relative's wedding on Orion. And I'm like, oh,
yes.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah, that one ends up being pretty fun. Yeah. Anyway, one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
And they all agree to get more robot, and they all.
Okay. And then the next episode. Okay. Hang on. I'm trying to think what the next episode was. But yeah, that's what the graphic novel. I think it's equally balanced between the three elements in the show, the animators, the voice actors, and the writers. And like when you have a graphic
hang
novel.
Hang on a second. You had said with the graphic novel, I think it's equally balanced between.
I'll try that again.
But he does say that he wants to go back to the story. One second. Thought I heard something. Sorry.